He'd probably be happy for that. He and his wife both.
Okay. So it's recording now, and I'm going to mute myself back again. Okay.
I just could share that Sean does record them usually.
Sean records his?
Mm-hmm. Usually.
Mm-hmm. We record our Sundays always, our Sunday Sangha gatherings. And people do listen to the recordings.
But where do you access that recording from the Sundays, Marcy?
Off the homepage of the Mountain Hermitage website.
Oh, okay.
There's a little square
on Sunday
that you can click on.
Okay. Great. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
So we'll wait about one more minute and see if anybody else comes. So we'll begin. I don't need to be introduced. Everybody who's here right now knows me. So let's just start with our meditation practice. Settling yourself into your seat. Bringing attention into the body in a very simple way. Mindful presence in the body sitting. Noticing points of contact, touch points, allowing the body, the mind, and heart to relax. Relaxed and alert. And when the breath appears in your field of mindful presence, bringing attention to the breath, not as an idea, not as a thought or a concept, but the direct experience, the sensorial experience of an in-breath and an out-breath, wherever it's most directly and clearly felt in your body. Letting the dispersed energy of the day to gather. Gathering in a simple way into the immediate presence of the sensation of an in-breath and an out-breath. As other sensations, bodily sensations, make themselves known, and bringing a mindful attention to these experiences, not discussing them or analyzing them or trying to make them go away or be different or not trying to make them stay. Just noticing, how is it? When thoughts, stories, or the wandering mind arises, just simply notice. Noticing it maybe without any judgment. Noticing with mindfulness. Thinking, wandering mind, story mind. If emotional states of mind arise, if various feeling tones of pleasant or unpleasant in relationship to bodily or mental experience arises, noticing this too. And noticing if the body and the mind react or just simply respond mindfully to physical sensation, to various states of mind, to the pleasant or unpleasant or maybe neutral tone of mind-body phenomena. And remembering to return and begin again with the sensation of an in-breath, the sensation of an out-breath, just as it is. relaxed and alert, interested, receptive, mindful presence. May all of the wholesome energies and the fruits that manifest through our practice serve with immeasurable impartiality, without bias, without prejudice, towards the welfare, the happiness, and the awakening of all beings everywhere. So we'll take 10 minutes now. You can do some walking meditation in the space you're in, or you could go outside, but you'll have to keep track of your time. Or if you're going to stay sitting in your seat, at least do some stretching meditation. Stretching your arms, your legs, your back. And you could also get down on the floor and do some yogic type stretching meditation as well. So in 10 minutes, I'll ring the bell to come back and we'll regather. Howard, are you here? Are you back yet? I think not. Well, wait a moment. There he is. Hi, Howard. Okay. So I'd like to begin the reflection, or the first part of the reflection, with a poem. It's called The Way It Is by William Stafford. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you're pursuing. You have to explain about the thread, but it's hard for others to see. When you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die. And you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. Probably most all of us have never, or maybe hardly ever, thought about being human rather than some other life form. The Buddhist spiritual path identifies human incarnation as an extraordinary, precious opportunity to evolve beyond that of any other life form. Buddhist teachings say that for spiritual evolution, it's better to be born human than even in a heavenly realm. Buddhist teachings and practice have helped me realize more and more clearly that human birth is extraordinarily precious and rare. They've helped to persuade and clarify for me that although we may be unaware of the as yet unexperienced effects and also the already experienced effects of karmic causes, these karmic causes, these karmic predicaments, if you will, have both a strong and a subtle effect on our life. And they result in what we could call unavoidable rebirths. Even just in the moment-to-moment-to-moment experiences of our lives, the rebirth of a new moment, to the new moment, to the new moment. In the Buddha Dhamma, it's understood that we obtain human bodies because of good deeds done in the past. But without living compassionately and mindfully, with the continuing determination to transcend selfish behaviors, we're actually squandering a rare chance to evolve spiritually. So, for example, our presence, all of us, our presence here together right now, It's arisen from beneficial causes and conditions so mysteriously and statistically rare as to be well beyond our ordinary human comprehension. Kind of like Jesus's metaphor of the camel passing through the eye of a needle. According to the Buddha, obtaining a human birth and following the true teachings of the Dhamma is as unlikely as it would be for a blind turtle to put its head through a single yoke that was cast upon the vast oceans of the world. The preciousness and the impermanence of human birth and the importance of using this to evolve spiritually is a call, so to say, a call for us towards living our lives more and more clearly immersed in ethical guidelines for conduct that are conducive to inner and outer harmony, harmony for ourselves and harmony for others as well. In our daily way of life, even in the midst of the many demands of a family, job demands, community demands, cultural and ethnic demands, national and international demands, all of what at times may feel like an amazing circus act of balancing with a full load on a tightrope running at full speed. Do we want to return to this way of being? Now that we've been forced in a way to step back from it, at least to some degree and in some ways. How to remain whole, how to remain steady, how to achieve a balance in the midst of the seeming contradictory tensions in life. How to remain whole and steady in the midst of the distractions and the challenges of life. How to remain balanced no matter what forces have a tendency to throw you off center. How to remain strong and clear and open-hearted no matter what shocks come in at the near and far periphery, or what shocks come in from our own body and mind. A simple response to all these questions is that we need to simplify our life. But the next question is how? How do we do this? We can't, and we mostly don't want to fully retire or shed all of our responsibilities. And we can't permanently be on vacation away from our daily life. So it's not what we could call total renunciation of the world that I'm talking about. But neither is it total acceptance of it all. In some ways, we've had a bit of taste of this in these last few months. And some of this taste has been agreeable to varying degrees for various people, for you. And some of it has also been quite difficult and quite challenging in relationship to various people's lives, and maybe for you to some degree as well. So how can we make sense of what to do? In taking time for oneself, in practicing mindfulness and loving kindness with sincerity and with depth, in creating the space and time to really be in a simple way with what is moment to moment to moment. Taking time to simply walk and be present in the body, in the movement. To eat and be really present with all the aspects and facets of eating. To learn to pay attention to whatever it is. And in these moments, we begin to see the nature of things. We begin to see the truth of things. We begin to see what it really is that brings ease, that brings contentment, that brings a sense of happiness. And we also begin to see what it is that brings disconnectedness, fragmentation, and the contractions of the heart. Am I reacting to what's happening in my body and in my mind? Am I reacting to what's happening in the world? Or am I able to respond appropriately? Am I able to respond clearly and compassionately? Can we gently hold the clear, almost invisible and beautiful thread lightly, heartfully, as life moves through us and all around us? In closing my part of this reflection, we're going to go on, but it's not just going to be me that's going on. Closing my part of this reflection, I'd like to offer a poem that comes from the elders of the Hopi Nation. And the title is "To My Fellow Swimmers." Here is a river flowing now very fast. It is so great and swift that there are those who will be afraid, who will try to hold on to the shore. They are being torn apart and will suffer greatly. Know that the river has its destination. The elders say we must let go of the shore, push off into the middle of the river, and keep our heads above water. And I say, see who is there with you and celebrate. At this time in history, we are to take nothing personally, and least of all, ourselves. For the moment we do, our spiritual growth and journey come to a halt. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your attitude and vocabulary. All that we do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. For we are the ones we have been waiting for. So, as we go on with our reflection, it's you all that will be offering some reflection to all of us, each of you to all of us. And I don't know if you've seen the questions that were sent out for reflection, but I will say, I will offer them out loud. And then open it up so that any of you can speak to any of the questions. And I'll say them slowly to give you a little bit of time to reflect within yourself silently. Why do you practice? Which of the practices that you regularly or irregularly engage in most impact your daily life? Do you experience a separation between your meditation practice and how you live your life? And if so, what is your personal experience of this in specific ways? Would you like to experience a more integrated relationship between the Buddhist teachings, your meditation practice, and your daily life? How might you be able to inspire, encourage, and help this to happen? So, reflecting on this incredibly precious human existence that we each have, and our Buddhist practice as a way of life, or potentially a way of life. Is there anybody that has anything to offer right yet? I'll repeat the questions if need be, but any responses or reactions to any of these questions, these reflective questions? Jean.
I guess I'm the first blind turtle coming up. My life feels so wondrous that metaphor, if you will, is so true for me. I couldn't have the spiritual life that I have today if I were still living and working in the middle of New York City. Sometimes I'm not quite sure how I got to New Mexico, but I'm here. And this surrealistic time that we're living in with the pandemic has given me so much more time to just see what this precious life is. And I do upon occasion think about how many billions of insects there are. I mean, I could have been one of them.
That's right.
But somehow, here I am. Mm-hmm. Why do I practice? Because I'm happier mm-hmm. when I practice. Mm-hmm. And increasingly over time, and especially during this time, there is a very poignant and palpable part of my life that is able to express itself. Mm. My main practice is metta. And one of the things that I have learned is that metta practice underlies almost everything in my practice. And one thing that's really important to me are trying to live by the precepts. Mm-hmm. And I believe that the precepts are grounded in metta, mm-hmm. in our attempt to be kind to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And do I see manifestations of this? Yes. One quick story. I live in a community where, until a couple of months ago, most of us ate in a dining room, and I usually sat at a large table with other residents, one of whom is probably the most negative person I've ever known. And I discovered about a year ago that she had serious physical illness and physical pain. And I began to do metta, to hold her in metta every day, because I wanted to be able to open my heart to her. And one of the things that I discovered was that at the lunch table, when she used to talk, I would look away and think about something else. But after I really had been working with metta for a long time in relationship to her, when she talked, I listened to her and established a relationship with her that changed both of us. Mm-hmm. And I think that my practice changes me every day. And I am weakly with gratitude that this
twinkly or tweakly?
Tweakly with gratitude that this is in my life. And I've talked a long time, but this means so much to me.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia.
Thank you. I mean, this kind of the small group, and the questions are very personal. So it is a time when we can be, like you just have been, Jean, we can be really personal with each other. It's a way that we get to know each other more deeply and inspire each other more deeply as well. And we learn from each other. It's a wonderful way to learn from each other. So.
Yeah.
Anybody else, would you like to say anything? Anybody?
It's Edla.
Yes, Edla.
Well, I even wrote a whole bunch of stuff down all week.
Oh, so you did use the questions as I asked. Uh-huh. Wonderful.
I was a good girl.
You were a good girl. Yeah.
But then as you read them again and you got to the last one, mm-hmm. or the next to last one about how it could be more integrated into your life.
Yes.
Practice. I realize I have this fantasy about me leaving everything behind.
Uh-huh.
Because I started this practice so late in life.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that in order to really go through the maze of all the illusions, it will probably take more years than I have. So I have to do it.
You never know.
You never know.
Don't set yourself up that way. You never know.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I stab at it the best I can, and it has totally changed my life. And I totally am in love with my practice and the way that it has affected my life and still is.
Mm-hmm.
I spent so many years trying to figure out myself
mm-hmm.
through life, like, you know, I mean, all kinds of things. And until, you know, this came along and said, you're never going to figure it out.
uh-huh.
That is like, that's a lost cause.
Mm-hmm.
So once I threw out that idea that I could figure anything out, and I actually realized that through this practice, I can really start to love myself and like myself in a way I never have before.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, feel very grounded in myself so I can be of some use to the rest of the world as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a great gift of this practice.
Yes.
So daily, I try to listen to a Dharma talk every day. I work sewing so I can listen to Dharma talks while I sew.
Well, very good.
Mm-hmm. And I listen to books and I meditate every day. And I think this is just now what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to keep a sense of humor too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was these two fishes that were looking at a hook with a worm. And the one fish said to the other, I tell you, the secret is non-attachment.
Okay. That's our teaching, one of our teachings for this evening. Yes, thank you.
Non-attachment.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, thank you, Marcia. You're very helpful. You've been a great influence in my life, and so has everyone that's here in this Sangha.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful.
Thank you, Edla. Next, who's next? Who would like to share or ask or make a statement as you wish?
Mm-hmm.
This is our group reflection. I almost didn't give a reflection. I almost thought, well, just do this. But then I thought I better say something. Yeah. Yes, Howard.
So during the sit today, I was experiencing, can you hear me okay?
Yes, mm-hmm. I can. Can everybody hear Howard?
Mm-hmm.
That's okay, good.
Experiencing what I usually do now, which is this tremendous gratitude. It was focusing on, at first as it often does, the sounds or the lack of sounds when fortunate enough to be living now. It's mostly different bird songs.
Mm.
So part of the gratitude, actually, I just wanted to express about what you said about metta, what Jean said.
Yes.
Realizing that I had practiced for more than 20 years before I became, for a brief time, your student, Marcia. And although I had known and studied about metta, I'd never actually practiced metta until you encouraged me to do it.
Can you hear, Jean?
Pardon?
A little bit hard.
Can you get a little closer to the microphone? Thank you.
I had never, even though I had been practicing for about 20 or more years, and had studied about metta, I'd never actually practiced metta until Marcia, as a teacher, encouraged me to do that. And so I remain very, very grateful to you, Marcia, for that. And what I wanted to just share about today's poetry that you read.
Mm-hmm.
The Hopi metaphor actually reminded me at the time that you were reading of another metaphor about a river.
By what?
Another metaphor about a river.
Oh, okay, yeah. You have to stay close to the microphone. It's hard to hear you otherwise.
Which is related to the pandemic, in that it was a metaphor that was actually developed by my main mentor in medicine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the upstream metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And this was John Stokel, who actually died during the pandemic of COVID.
Oh. Uh-huh.
At 97.
Wow.
So John is considered the father of primary care. Mm-hmm. And I could go on about that. Very, very wonderful person and teacher. And part of his teaching was actually about the upstream causes in primary care. And I just wanted to share this because it's, I think, a different way to look at the flowing river,
mm-hmm.
which is that the metaphor is expressed in different ways, but one of the ways is that you're sitting at the river watching the water, and every once in a while a body flows down.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the bodies are dead, some of them are barely alive.
Mm-hmm.
And the tendency in primary care is to jump in the river and try to save whoever you can.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is to try to figure out what's going on upstream.
Uh-huh.
Causing this.
Yes, there you go.
And so this is actually a very troubling metaphor, and it relates to me about what you said about struggle. Because in my practice, I've realized, because of my justice problem that I've shared before in the group,
yes,
actually part of the practice is struggle, and that it's okay to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
mm-hmm.
desirable to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what I've chosen to do is to try to do my best struggling about these upstream causes of downstream suffering experience. And one example is about the pandemic. And very briefly, the upstream cause of the pandemic is very, you know, not frequently discussed, but it has to do with the destruction of nature, the destruction of habitat.
It's discussed more now, though, actually, Howard. I don't know about where you are in Korea, but I've been reading more about it. It's been, I mean, I already thought about it, but it's been up more.
Yeah, no, it, I think many people are realizing this and writing about it. And there is, so there's a lot that can be done about this. So what I wanted to just share is that in this feeling, experience of gratitude and practice that building into every day, I've been struggling with this. And it's possible to do that, I think, in a way that is wholesome and meaningful. I guess I just wanted to share.
So I have a question, not that that has to be answered, but I just presented. What about a different word than struggle? Struggle has certain connotations and let's just leave it at that, has certain connotations, different for different people. But might there be, and you don't have to answer it, but just consider it, might there be a different word for the process than the word struggle? As one of the elders from the Hopi Nation said, maybe there's another word. Just, I leave it at that. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Howard.
Would you like a brief answer to that?
If you have one, brief, because I want to offer some time to other people too. Yes, if you have a brief answer.
I don't think so, because, you know, the sources of the problem have to do with contradiction and concentrated wealth and power, as far as I can tell. And even though it's possible to bear compassion for those responsible, you expressed many times the story of our ex-Secretary of Defense in Taos.
At the airport, yes.
Still,
I'm not sorry to some of these people, but anyways, yes.
Doesn't improve by just being compassionate.
Well, I didn't say the word had to be compassion. I didn't say what the best word might be, but the process of struggle, might there be another word? It is a process, but might there be another word? So just think about it a little more. Not think right this minute, maybe, because we're going to hear from some other people, but let it gestate a little bit. Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to share anything? Did you raise your hand, Sila?
I waved it. I didn't quite raise it.
You're tentative.
I was just thinking that when I was very little, we went down to the seashore, and we were all playing in the sand and stuff. And I went down and waded. I was probably like two or three, and I was running along the waterline. And a big wave came up and was just about to wash me away. And I got pulled towards the ocean, and I just tried crawling desperately and clawing into the sand. And I did not, obviously, this time anyway, I did not get sucked in by the undertow. And I realize, okay, that's what practice is. Is not getting sucked in by the undertow.
Yeah, that's a good metaphor. Yep.
And these days, there is so much of that undertow going on.
Yeah.
We are supposed to be enraged. We are supposed to be afraid. We are supposed to clutch for dear life, and we're not whatever it is supposed to reflect. And I'm thinking what Howard talks about a lot of what's going on upstream is people who are consumed with greed that we don't really understand. I'll need a new phone soon. Gotta have that. Need to get back out there and buy more stuff. And so there's all this greed, there's all this fear, there's all this perfectly justifiable rage. And all of it involves me not being clear about what I am and am not doing. And if I can simply stop contributing to the crazy, maybe there will be a little bit less toxicity in the river and a few fewer bodies floating down. But all I can do at my level is not throw more people in the water where I am. And if I can pull people onto the shores so that they don't get sucked in by the undertow where we are, then maybe I can do that. Mm-hmm. So for me, practice basically is not getting pulled in by the undertow. I will shut up.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I would like to just add that when we get pulled in by the undertow, usually there's a huge reactive phenomena that goes on within us, often, very often. If we don't get pulled in by it, but we recognize it, then we can respond. Then we have the potential to respond, which is what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Yes, Barbara.
Well, a little bit on the issue of struggle, mm-hmm. and then I'll say a little bit more about my practice. I guess I see that when I'm struggling or watch people struggle, that we are caught and we are in our we are suffering beyond the circumstance, and we're contributing to our own dukkha and our own difficulties. Mm-hmm. And even though I use that word a lot, I recognize that just saying that word sometimes leads me down the rabbit hole, and that if I can try to reframe something that I'm intending to what I would like to see, then that's not really a struggle. It's a response. And for an example, I'm part of a group that will be doing something on the 4th of July, but we're trying to frame it in a way. It's going to be a peace caravan. I was part of one on Memorial Day. And it's really not about going out and yelling, and even though people have done that and there's a need to not be silent.
Yes.
But trying to frame things about what we would like to see rather than to critique what we and be upset by what we are experiencing and wanting to have change. So kind of, it's a reframe to a more positive.
Very difficult to do that for some
people. It's really difficult, and I think it's really important to do. And as far as my practice, why I practice is to continue every moment that I'm awake or trying to be awake, is to cultivate a bigger and more open heart. Mm-hmm. And when I can do that in my daily life, in the work that I do in the community, in my interactions with my partner, whoever, I feel more authentic. Mm-hmm. I feel like I touch into a place of goodness, not in an egotistical way, but a goodness of recognizing my own goodness, but openness to that there is goodness in every other living being. Mm-hmm. Including and I'm not even going to name all the people that you'll all agree that like, that there's goodness in trying to cultivate that, as well as to recognize that truly every living being is doing the best in this moment.
That they can.
And the best in this moment is most of the time far from what most of us want, mm-hmm. and or think we want.
Mm-hmm.
And back to what you had said earlier, Marcia, or one of the poems, I think you said, "This is the way it is."
That was the title of.
Yeah, and that's, when I can do that, and I'm really in my heart, I can be sad, I could be upset, but I just can't go to where I go a lot of the times, whereas, you know, getting upset and getting kind of a little rageful or wanting to, you know, go and get somebody removed from office or taken out or whatever, wherever I go in my thoughts. I can't do that if I'm, and that doesn't mean I don't on a daily basis find little ways, sometimes not so little ways, to work with people in the stream, so to speak. When I help people get food, I'm doing something concrete to help other living beings be able to eat tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, so I feel like it's a combination. And certainly my meditation practice guides me through that and helps me tremendously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you very much. Yes. Anybody else? Anything you want to say? Jean.
I just want to speak to a very small area of practice that's made an enormous enormous difference in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole process of right speech.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a lot of my early adulthood being unkind with words in ways that I thought were helpful to people because they were true from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned so much, thank you, Sila, about right speech and how there are so many facets to what makes right speech help us move in a kind and open-hearted way through the world.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the practice is recognizing whether or not the person to whom we are speaking will hear what we have to say.
Yeah.
And I think that really dovetails with what Barbara's talking about, is opening your heart and realizing that from my perspective, not only does everyone have some good, but I mean, I truly believe there's a Buddha nature in all of us, but that the people who are doing things that seem so destructive, the ones that create some of that struggle upstream, are people who have some kind of innate suffering as well. And if I rage against them, that's not the kind of speech that opens my heart.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, right speech has just made a huge difference in the way I move through the world. That's what practice is changing the way that I interact with the world. And I can't identify little bits of difference between cushion practice and life practice. It all seems to kind of meld together at this point. And it's not because I've done this for a long time. It's just because I don't think I can tease them apart.
Well, that's a positive thing. Yeah. That's good. Good. You know, when I was the resident teacher for staff at the Insight Meditation Society, and every week, and they still do this with a different teacher now, of course, but we had a Dharma meeting or a Dhamma meeting. And one of the Dhamma meetings was about right speech, or actually it went on for a few weeks. And if I'm remembering correctly, pretty much everybody on staff, and at that point, I think it was about 21 people, including the administrative staff. It's bigger now, there are more people now, but agreed that right speech was the most difficult daily life practice. They felt that it was the most challenging and most important.
Well, I can honestly say that 30 years ago, my husband, who I dearly loved and respected as a warm, kind-hearted person, said, you know, sometimes you're a little short on tact. And I think working with right speech for the last 20 some years has put a little in my tact bank balance.
Yeah, good.
And that's what practice has done for me.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to offer anything at all? Yes, Susan.
Well, folks have been so genuine. I just can't just sit back here, which would be my choice. But what you were saying, Jean, about right speech just reminded me of something. My mother said, many years ago, my mother was not in the Buddhist way at all. But she said, when something comes out of your mouth, you can never take it back. So, you know, I might say something, whatever it would be. And then I would say, oh, I'm really sorry. Doesn't matter for her, you know, you put it out there. And, you know, that has had an amazing impact on me in terms of what I say. Over many, many years. I mean, you know, I had to work on tons of stuff of what I say in here. Mm-hmm. I say out here was so influenced by my mother. Mm-hmm. So I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm. That, you know, when if I to say something hurtful, the hurtful is there. Even if I say I'm sorry, mm-hmm. It's there and it's out in the universe. Okay, so since I started to talk, I think I can say a little more.
All right.
When you say, why do we practice? As some of you have alluded to, the impact it has on your life, and you mentioned, Marcia, about reactive. I was like the reactive queen. You know, I that's all I knew how to be, and it caused such incredible suffering. This was all internal. It wasn't that I was, you know, like reactive and challenging you, or it was all the reactiveness internally. And when I started meditating, which was probably about 30 years ago, and it took quite a while to shift that pattern, I have to say it may have saved my life, because I'm not sure what path I would have taken being that of that mind. And during this time, Jean Smith spoke about being in New York, and you know, that's my nature to just be really busy and do this and do that. And if I did not have meditation now and the practice, I don't know how I would be moving through this sheltering in place, which I have been for 3 months. This is it, you know, and have had no trouble with it. It's like, this is what it is, and just practice, accept. And I know that it's because of the impact the practice has had over the years, Mm-hmm. So in this moment, I can notice, oh, I see the sadness. Right? Okay, there it is. Okay, I could step back from it. So why do I practice? Why would I do anything else? Mm-hmm. Answer I would have for that.
Yeah, you've told me that many times, Susan.
And it's I'll fall away for a while because I'll get all caught up. And then I'll step back and say, was that worth it? So anyway, thank you, Marcia. These questions, it's the first time I've seen them. They are very thought-provoking, and I think I'll ponder them.
Well, you all can reflect on them more, you know, yes, by yourself. Yeah. As time goes on, if you'd like to, they're helpful.
But thank you to those of you who shared. I mean, it's just I don't know what to say. It's special. And I appreciate it.
It is. Thank you very much, everybody. Anybody else? I have another poem I'd like to offer before we stop our evening, or it's all evening for all of us, I think. Yes, we don't have any. Well, I don't know. Howard, what time is it where you are?
It's 10:38 a.m.
Okay, so it's morning for you and evening for the rest of us. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Well, I'm going to offer this poem. Some of you may know this poem. It's called The Great Turning. You've asked me to tell you of the Great Turning, of how we saved the world from disaster. The answer is both simple and complex. We turned. For hundreds of years, we had turned away as life on Earth grew more precarious. We turned away from the homeless men on the streets, the stench of the river, the children orphaned in Iraq, the mothers dying of AIDS in Africa. We turned away because that's what we had been taught. To turn away from our pain, from the hurt in another's eyes, from the drunken father, from the friend betrayed. Always we were told in actions louder than words to turn away, turn away. And so we became a lonely people, caught in a world moving too quickly, too mindlessly towards its own demise. Until it seemed as if there was no safe place to turn. No place inside or out that did not remind us of fear or terror, despair and loss, anger and grief. Yet on one of those days, someone did turn. Turned to face the pain. Turned to face the stranger. Turned to look at the smoldering world and the hatred seething in too many eyes. Turned to face herself, himself. And then another turned, and another, and another. And as they wept, they took each other's hands until whole groups of people were turning. Young and old, gay and straight, people of all colors, all nations, all religions, turning not only to the pain and hurt, but to the beauty, gratitude, and love. Turning to one another with forgiveness and a longing for peace in their hearts. At first, the turning made people dizzy, even silly. There were people standing to the side, gawking and criticizing, trying to knock the turners down. But the people turning kept getting up, helping one another to their feet. Their laughter and kindness brought others into the turning circle. Until even the naysayers began to smile and sway. As the people turned, they began to spin, reweaving the web of life, mending the shocking tears, knitting it back together with the colors of the earth, sewing on tiny mirrors so the beauty of each person, each creature, each plant, each life might be seen and respected. And as the people turned, as they spun like the earth through the universe, the web wrapped around them like a soft baby blanket, making it clear all were loved, nothing separate. As this love reached into every crack and crevice, the people began to wake and wonder, to breathe and give thanks, to celebrate together. And so the world was saved, but only as long as you too, sweet one, remember to turn. And so as you've shared, our practice is turning us as we turn with it. Thank you for your practice.
Thank you, Marcia, for your teachings.
You're welcome.
Thank you all for being here.
Yes.
A couple of announcements. The board has decided, with the kind generosity of Terry and David Patton, to offer a day of forest bathing. It's Saturday, July 11th, up in Black Lake. There'll be a whole lot more information coming in the next email and also on the website. The website stuff should be up tomorrow. And we have a new month coming. Sila, you're teaching next week. Right?
So, I think so.
Yep. Thank you all for supporting our practice with yours.
I have one announcement, if you're done with your announcements. As some of you know, maybe all of you, I don't know, but I'm teaching an online, 5-day online Dana retreat through the Mountain Hermitage, November 8 through 12. It will be a Samatha concentration retreat for 5 days online. And I'm announcing it now because it's almost full. We only have a few openings left, maybe three, maybe four, but maybe only three. So if any of you have been considering the possibility of participating in this Dana retreat, this concentration Samatha Dana retreat, I would encourage you to send in your application as soon as you can, because there's hardly any space left, which was surprising to us, but that's the way it is. So do let us know if you're interested.
So, Marcia?
Yes.
I wrote you an email. Did you get it?
I did, and I responded. Did you get my response?
Oh, I didn't get the response. Okay, I will look for it.
I'll send it to you again when we're done.
Okay, thank you very much.
I did suggest you, or say that it's okay with me if you apply. But I had more of a response than that to your questions. Okay. Take good care, everybody. Have a really good week of practice. And thank you for sharing this evening. It's quite wonderful to share this closely. Very nice. Bye-bye. Going, going, gone.